Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 1229.PS11822, certificate number 42504. The Stone of Scoon. Scone? Scoon?
We're going to have to teach the controversy. You know, every once in a while, we here on the program actually do want to figure out how to pronounce a word.
It's rare.
We don't normally care. And in this instance, I would not have cared. But then Ken had some Alex P. Keaton desire to nice. Be right about this.
Nice reference. you know what archetype the young people love, Alex P. Keaton.
And so what I would call the Stone of Scone, because it literally
it's
is the word scone.
S-C-O-N-E.
And also it rhymes with stone. It's like a lovely stone of
scone. It's not the stoon of scone.
But then Ken's like, oh no, they say scone.
I found video of some Scots guy saying scone.
You can find a video of a Scots guy saying anything.
And he won't,
literally
and he
anything.
Won't be sober.
The stone of scone.
Stone of scone.
You know, maybe it rhymes to them, but
Shakespeare actually rhymes it with one. Is there a chance it's the Stone of Scun?
The Stone of Scun?
In Macbeth, it's the Stone of Scun.
Yeah.
Well, complicating matters further, in the British Isles, when they put clotted cream and jam on a...
On a what?
On a scone.
It's a scone?
They kind of say scone, don't they? Weirdos.
The Ron of Scone like, falls mainly on the plum.
Like Genghis Scone?
The Rune of Scone falls mainly on the plume.
Basically, we need to invent some new vowel that falls medially between oon, own, on, and un.
Oon.
The Stone of Scone.
Of Scone. I believe the children are our future, but I also believe that I'm going to say,
you should say
the Stone of Scone.
Okay, let's do the beginning again then.
Okay.
Entry number 1229.PS11822, certificate number 42504, the Stone of Scone.
Actually, you know, the Scots pronounce it Scone.
They do?
Yeah.
Oh, now I feel inauthentic.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's a common misunderstanding. No one can understand the Scots when they speak. I know we have a lot of Scottish listeners, and I
tune out very quickly when you speak to me.
I very definitely apologize to you and the Irish listeners, because I may defame you, but also we end up supporting you.
So. The thing about the Scottish listeners is they listen to the show in droves, none of them on Patreon.
Oh, interesting.
I'm just kidding.
Because the Scottish pound doesn't translate. Well, especially now.
Because they're cheap, get it?
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't get it.
No. The Irish are on Patreon in droves.
As a Welshman.
But they give us their fairy gold, which immediately disappears as soon as it appears in Patreon.
We always pledge the money, and then at the end of the, right before it gets charged, we take it back. Lol.
Nobody will believe a pledge from a Welshman like ourselves.
The Scots figure highly in this show. They were the ones that were so mad about my single malt scotch episode. No, that's in fact wrong. It was all a bunch of homebrewers in San Francisco that were mad about it.
Yeah. The Scots had bigger fish to fry. They're out building steam engines.
You know, they fry regular sized fish in Scotland.
Salmon, probably.
Salmon?
Isn't that what they're all people?
I thought it was all cod.
People are always going up to the rivers of Scotland for salmon fishing.
Scotland.
Or am I thinking of the Yemen?
No, I think you're right. They're Atlantic salmon, though. Yeah, we don't recognize them out here.
They're not our correct salmon. Correct. It's like you see clam chowder and you're like,
those aren't clams,
sir. I've eaten clam chowder. That's no clam chowder.
I suppose you've been thinking quite a bit about the royal family lately.
Yeah, just staring at my wall full of collectible plates and mugs, thinking about the royals like I often do.
You and your lovely wife, Mindy, and your children have been to England many times. And, I'm going to start pronouncing it England because they're, of all of the pronunciations that people don't like,
it is easily the most annoying one.
Inglang is the one that makes people the maddest.
And you refuse to explain it.
Oh, well, so I will explain it.
It's a boring story and it's long and here goes.
No, it's not boring, but it's problematic.
Oh, here we go.
I was in my room in a very old house and I was trying to go to sleep in the night. Maybe not trying to go to sleep. Maybe I was reading. And I heard a commotion in the front yard. And there were, so I, of course, got up and looked out the window. And there were four kids who had pulled over, probably because they needed to go to the bathroom. And they had come into my front yard and were peeing in the yard. And they were African-American kids. And so I opened the window.
Where was this, D.C.?
This was here in Seattle.
Oh.
And I leaned out the window and I said, hey, stop peeing in my yard. Because it was not an unfinished, you know, like gravel yard. It was a yard that I gardened in and had.
You're so uptight.
I was really uptight. And they laughed, you know, as teenagers will do. And and then as they were leaving, one of the girls, because they were girls.
Oh, you buried the lead.
Yeah. One of the girls turned back to me and said, go back to Inglang. and they all laughed and they got in their car and they drove away. And I was like, go back to Inglang? That's the sickest burn
I know.
That has ever been delivered.
Just got casually owned by a bunch of peeing teens.
Like, whoa. And I sat down on my bed and was like, go back to England. Wow. And so so I never pronounced the word differently after that because it feels like
it's your homeland.
I have been banished back to England and it's only a matter of time.
Do you use it for other countries? Do you say Bangkok, Thailand?
I've never been told to go back to Thailand. I've only once been, and I was like, I feel very legitimate about asking you not to pee. Well, not even asking, telling you to stop peeing in my garden at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, that famous English tradition of not peeing in one's garden.
Please don't pee in someone else's garden. You can pee in your own garden. But yeah, go back to England. And then they all thought that was hilarious, which, you know, of course,
it was. It occurs to me that for Scotland, you could say Scott Lang.
Scott Lang.
Which I believe is Ant-Man's name.
Scott Lang.
Isn't Ant-Man Scott Lang?
Well, anyway, no one ever told me to go back to Scott Lang either. And, you know, they weren't wrong, right? If I were sent back to somewhere, if somebody were...
Yep. That is your homelang.
Yeah, effectively going to
ancestral homelang.
Send me back to my homelang.
Your motherlang.
But I have noticed a lot of talk online about, of all of my mispronunciations, that's the one that drives people crazy.
It's all those teens.
Yeah.
They follow you on social now and they're getting your goat.
So I have decided that's the one that, yeah, maybe it irritates them because they all sensed the story.
The inherent racism of your story.
And they felt like, no, that's not, we don't imitate
we don't like
other
your,
people's patois.
We don't like your gentrifier story, Mr. No. Roderick.
And so you're banished. And so anyway, it's harder to say than England, so I'm just going to switch back to England.
You do have to hit it very hard when you do it.
Inglang.
Maybe that's what annoys people. If you could find some way to not sell it so hard. Well, Inglang.
And the thing is, Inglang, she put the emphasis on the Lang.
It does mean land of the angles.
Yeah.
But usually they put that angle part before the land.
Oh, I see what you're after. Saying. It's like a, yeah, she split it down the middle.
It does come from angle land, I think.
I wonder if they're still laughing about that. I wonder if she pronounces it that way.
They probably, if they're homage. Peeing in a stranger's yard at 1 a.m., they probably don't remember it that clearly.
They didn't remember it the next day.
Their geography is probably as hazy as their memory.
But where do you fall on the last episode? On the lapsed episode of this program, you expressed a little bit of sympathy for Queen Elizabeth as a monarch who probably, given what she was handed at the beginning, did a fairly good 20th century job of it.
Above average.
Yeah.
Above average caretaker of a lousy, lousy job.
And so now we're facing, in the recording of this show, a future with King Charles III.
Oof.
And how do you feel, where do you stand on Charlie?
Where do I stand on him?
Yeah. Where do you stand on? On his neck? On his ankles?
On his neck, probably.
I mean, were you old enough to remember Lady Di, but you don't. You probably are not old enough to remember the marriage and all the
I actually remember the wedding. What was it, 80 or 81?
Yeah, pretty
early. It's one of the first news events that I was following closely. Because, of course, I had grandparents, and of course they were watching the royal fairy tale wedding.
Of course, of course.
And so I remember all this progressing from with a media story being Di is the tabloid troublemaker, Charles is a sympathetic one.
Oh.
Well into here are Camilla's emails, and Charles is the buffoon and really maybe the worst dirty talker in the history of the English language. And then well into the post-Diana, post-Dodi hagiography of she just was a sweet girl who wanted to help, who was at the mercy of a terrible family. And now kind of into this fourth phase where I feel like I know more about Charles now. And, you know, through fictional portrayals in movies and TV, you kind of come to feel for that guy who had to deal with the, you know, he's kind of got a legacy of family trauma too. The mean dad who sent him to the wrong
private school
and the mentor who it turns out was some awful guy, and at least the IRA blew him up. So that's nice. It just seemed like there's almost no chance for Charles to be a normal person, and he is not, true to form.
Right. And
your take? I guess that's four takes, not one.
I don't know. You know, he spent a lot of time rehabilitating his image as an environmentalist and a good steward of the land. And
do you think he cares?
How much is
image maintenance?
I don't know. I feel like if you got to pick something, right? He's the Al Gore of England.
He never had his teeth redone, so that says something for maybe this is all authentic. His Middle Age Enlightenment.
All those sartorialist websites that are always talking about how to dress properly as a proper gentleman, they're always really fond of showing pictures of Charles wearing the same double-breasted blazer over the course of decades. And they actually zoom in on this particular blazer and show where it's been repaired. The blazer has, you know, patches in it. It's just a double-breasted blazer, but it's always used as an example of the austerity, not only of the rich, but how that kind of austerity is a form of style that you as a well-dressed American, you know, don't be afraid to repair the frayed collar of your well-made jacket. So that gives one at least a feeling like,
that seems like a very John Roderick take on Prince Charles.
Yeah.
He doesn't, you know.
He doesn't repair his clothes.
He does repair his clothes.
He does.
So that's a vote in his favor, maybe?
I remember, you know, when Lady Di and Charles got married, I was a teenager and a dedicated...
So was she, I believe.
She was a little bit older than me. I was a dedicated subscriber to National Lampoon magazine at the time, and the Lampoon had gone through all of its really hard times, losing its key...
The funny people,
losing them to Saturday Night Live right in the few years before I became a subscriber. I had all the old Lampoons, which inspired me, and then I subscribed to the new Lampoon, which was edited by P.J. O'Rourke.
This happened to me with Spy Magazine, so I have the younger Gen X version of this.
Yeah, the early ones were great, and then it became kind of like a parody of itself. But in 1984, the Lampoon did a parody of Playboy magazine, and it had Bo Derek on the cover.
Was it one of their kind of full magazine parodies?
It was a full magazine and a parody, and the centerfold was Lady Di. And they basically just took her face and superimposed it on a naked lady.
This was shock humor in 1984, because that's a princess that they're...
Yeah, and it was a big scandal.
Who can imagine?
And of course, you know, I was just old enough to have found this parody by legal means. And so it causes me to think of that whole era, the marriage of the prince and princess, the princess herself, always in the context of this Playboy parody done by the less funny group of lampoon writers.
That would be like the TV shows that I only know through the Mad Magazine version.
Yeah, right.
It's like, wow, they're really zinging the streets of San Francisco this week.
I can't shake it. Streets of San Francisco, a great TV show.
Oh, I apologize for the implication.
No, it's all right. Carl Malden.
apologies to Carl Malden if you're listening.
But the coronation of the king has yet to happen, and it's going to be a big event, right?
Yeah, right.
Probably not as big as the coronation of Elizabeth herself.
Is it scheduled? I have not been following
this. I don't
think
so. I think it's not scheduled.
Because she waited almost a year or more. I can't remember when he died. Early 52, and she's not crowned until mid-53.
But Charles probably will get it done a little bit faster, if only because he's only got so long to live. I'm sure
that's what he'll say.
But also there's, you know, I think there's an awareness that there's a kind of crisis in the legitimacy of the monarchy, and let's get this all done.
Let's get this guy on the throne before more of his letters come out.
Yeah, before the Tory party falls out of favor and there's a new socialist government that refuses to sign off on it. But in order to crown Charles King, there needs to be a moving company has to get involved.
Huh?
Because there's an element of the coronation of English monarchs that has only very recently, only in the 1990s, been removed from Westminster Abbey. And if he were to be crowned without this key component, I don't think it would be considered it wouldn't be a legitimate ceremony.
It's not just that he would know in his heart that his reign would be somehow less,
which would be true,
less blessed, but also it's possible that it's not legally or traditionally.
Well, you know, so much of it is based in tradition. Mm-hmm. Why are we even doing this? Why does it have to happen
it's
here?
Pretty much the root of monarchy is why are we doing this?
Why are we doing this?
Why are we still doing this?
So, all of the elements need to be in place. Otherwise, there's always going to be somebody that's like, no, it didn't. It's not legit. And the element currently resides in Scotland. It was only given back to the Scots in 1996.
After, back to the Scots.
Yes.
So after, it is of Scottish origins.
Well, no.
What?
But it resided in Scotland for a long time. And so, of course, the Scots lay claim to it, as they do to everything that's been to Scotland. It's once it's consecrated by the Scots, it never isn't Scottish.
I have never been to Scotland, so I'm not Scottish.
Have you never been to Scotland?
But you have.
I have.
So you are Scottish.
Yes.
And if it's not Scottish,
it's rubbish.
It's crap.
It's crap. What we're talking about, of course, is the Stone of Scone.
The Stone of Scone.
The Stone of Scone, which is a big, as the name implies, a big stone.
I thought you were going to say it's a big stone.
It's a big stone. It's a chunk.
Is it bigger than Plymouth Rock?
It's a big dumper.
Because we've been on the record as saying that Plymouth Rock is a bummer.
It's not as big as you think, right? It's no moose, the Plymouth Rock. This Stone of Scone is smaller than Plymouth Rock.
Is it any good? Because, well, you know, a small stone can be good if it's, you know, the quartz in your watch or the diamond in your ring.
True. True.
Sizes isn't everything.
What about the stone in my heart? What about the stone in my bladder? Gallbladder.
My gallbladder grew 3 sizes that day.
Well, let's, in order to get to the heart of the importance of the Stone of Scone,
or even the gallbladder of it,
we're going to have to go all the way back. We're going to have to set the Wayback Machine to way, way, way back.
Is this pre-Norman? Are we going back to 9th century Wessex or something?
No, we're going all the way back to Jacob.
In the Bible?
In Genesis.
Wow. So like 4,000 BC when God created the earth.
Well, a little bit after God created the earth.
3,999 BC.
Do you remember?
The earth is still piping hot from the oven.
Do you remember the story of Jacob?
I do.
Okay, give us the story of Jacob. This is my favorite part of the show.
It's when I do Bible trivia?
Yeah, Bible quizzes.
It's time for Ken's Bible quiz.
Okay, Jacob in Genesis.
Jacob is one of two sons of the biblical patriarch Isaac and Rebekah.
Did he come first or second?
Well, that's the whole tricky thing about Jacob.
Go on.
Jacob was born first, but his furry brother Esau was able to trick their aged parents into giving him, Esau, the birthright.
Esau's
a bit of a trickster.
Is he a little bit of a baby elephant?
Well, Isaac's less furry.
Right.
Esau's kind of a baby gorilla.
But he's a trickster.
Yeah, he's an Esau-it type.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe they should rename Esau-it Esau.
Esau.
So through a series of complicated tactile disguises and delicious bowls of soup, Esau arranges to steal Jacob's legitimacy as the firstborn son. Is this the part of the story that's relevant, or are we talking about adult Jacob wrestling with an angel?
Nope, it's right in between. So
Jacob goes on to, well.
So we're talking about Genesis 28.
Okay.
Chapters.
That's my favorite Genesis album. Yep, did they number theirs like Chicago? Is that like a?
Genesis 28.
Prog rock convention.
18 through 22. This tells the story of Jacob wandering the wilderness in exile or having been deprived of his birthright.
Oh, yes. There's an altar of some kind, right?
He lays down to go to sleep. And he has a dream where
there's a ladder going to heaven.
That's the
later inspiring the Tim Robbins movie, Jacob's Ladder.
That's right. The titular ladder, Jacob's Ladder. And he sees that there's God. And God says, Jacob, you are the one that's going to inherit all of the kingdoms.
Despite last time your brother really outmaneuvering you with the soup.
You're gonna get all the kingdoms,
yay!
And you're gonna take those kingdoms from Israel, and you're gonna spread them around the world.
In fact, Jacob is renamed Israel in this vision. This modern name of the state of Israel comes from God's new name for Jacob.
So Jacob wakes up, and the thing is, Jacob was so poor that he
how poor was he?
He was so poor that he lay down that night with a rock for a pillow. Do you remember this?
I do.
And he woke up in the morning, and there was the rock, and he said, I have had this tremendous vision, and I am going to consecrate this rock as my holy pillow, because this was where I had my great vision.
Effectively, it becomes like a stone altar of a kind.
Becomes a stone altar, and is a treasured piece of the patrimony of the region.
Wait,
there in Bethlehem.
Wait, is there a place where this is said to have taken place and therefore some likely rocks?
Outside of Bethlehem.
Huh.
Outside of Bethlehem, which was named by Jacob, Bethel.
I'm going to call. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Stone in Bethel.
And so there it remained until several thousand years went by. And Nebuchadnezzar. Now, how do you pronounce that?
I say Nebuchadnezzar.
Nebuchadnezzar is how they say it. I just was testing you.
I don't know.
With Nebuchadnezzar.
You kind of had a quixotic approach to testing me there.
So Nebuchadnezzar of the Babylonians mm-hmm. is conquering Jerusalem.
Yes.
In his bad way. And no less a person than Jeremiah.
The prophet.
The prophet Jeremiah. This is in about 580 odd, what we used to call BC, before Christ, and now we say before the Common Era, BCE.
I think Earth less piping hot.
No one has said BC in a long time, right? It still seems new to me.
No, I feel like BC and AD actually still have some currency. I think some style guides actually recommend that because it takes a while for upstart thought technology like CE and BCE to take off.
Yeah.
Plus, it's the kind of thing that now will become a Fox News story where it's like, guess what, boomers?
Why are
they've made your Scooby-Doo gang lesbians now in the schools.
So Jeremiah is, he bails on Jerusalem. He gets out of there. And in the course of splitting to Egypt, he travels with his scribe, Baruch.
Okay.
And...
must be nice to have a scribe when you travel.
Tell you what. And a few of the daughters of Zedekiah.
Zedekiah.
Thank you.
The king.
Zedekiah, the last king of Judah. So he takes a couple of daughters with him.
Wow, he's got princesses into the wild.
He does. Now, he's already kind of old at this point. So I think the daughters are just like, let's go. It's not like, hey, I'm taking some daughters. Maybe. It's more like,
hop in.
You daughters come with me.
I'll keep you safe. Come with me if you want to live.
And they go to Egypt, and maybe the trail grows cold. Maybe they found the lost tribes of Israel. You know, there's a lot of possibilities.
Who can say?
From there. But one of the stories, it's a popular story, and you will soon be able to guess popular with whom. One of the stories has it that Jeremiah and the daughters of Zedekiah, including the oldest daughter, Tehatephi.
Okay. Probably not biblical, but okay.
They journey to Ireland. Famous location of Judean prophets.
If you were fleeing from Judea, where would you go? Obviously Ireland, because there's probably a cheap Ryanair flight.
That's right.
It's probably $26 before they add all the baggage fees.
They would have taken a shuttle, right? A shuttle boat.
This is one of my favorite things about medieval Britain, how they're so convinced that they must be the continuation of biblical culture, that you got all these hymns about how, boy, there's nothing more Jerusalem-y than the one we're going to build here in Sussex.
Well, it was very popular retconning in medieval Britain, but yeah. We will see in a second that it is not confined to medieval Britain.
Uh-oh.
So as the story goes, and again, this is retconned with an awful lot of, there are modern scholars that really want this to have
this trip to have happened.
Yeah. And want to find some historical documentation of it. Now,
I mean, there's probably very little historical documentation of Jeremiah the prophet, period, much less of Ireland at this time.
Well, and
it seems unlikely that we're going to find his plane ticket.
Yeah, 580 BC. It does feel like the Irish were not keeping a really great records. Most of the records would have been in song.
They were having a hard time keeping their peat dry.
Yeah.
In 600 BC.
So, of course, most of the documentation of this story starts to come up in about 1500 AD. So 2000 years later, hard to draw a direct literary timeline. But Jeremiah, apparently, along with a few of the princesses of Zedekiah, also brings the pillow of Jacob, the consecrated stone that had been hanging out in Bethlehem.
I mean, we've still skipped untold centuries of how the stone got from
thousands of years
Jacob to Jeremiah.
Yeah, well, I guess it was there in Bethlehem. Millennia. And of all of the things, as you are fleeing Nebuchadnezzar, of all the things to grab on your way out, like you want to get your photo albums, you want to get like maybe your
Krugerrands out of the safe.
Yeah, your birth certificate, and also the very, very large stone that was the pillow of Jacob.
How big is the stone as we see it today? Because this is, how heavy is it?
As we see it today, now I'm going to give you the measurements in our imperial measurements, and then,
thank you.
And I'm also that, and that's for our American listeners, and then for our international listeners, I'll also give it to you in this weird other form.
We should record a second version of the show every week that has all metric measurements.
Normally, I don't do it. I just say inches, and I assume that
they can figure it out.
Yeah, because people all around the world watch American television. But here's what I'm going to tell you: it's about 2 feet by 1.5 feet by slightly less than a foot, and it's sort of rectangular, and it weighs about 335 pounds.
It's the size of that toy basket over there.
It's exactly the size of that toy basket. To our international listeners, that is 66 centimeters by 42 centimeters by 26 centimeters, and it weighs 152 kilograms.
So not a giant boulder, but not trivial to carry around.
Right.
A man could not do it, much less an elderly Jeremiah type.
Right, and I'm betting a man and two princesses, between two and three princesses, could only barely
You could maybe shuffle it across the room, but to... From Palestine to Ireland?
You've also got Baruch, but I'm betting that there had to be other people involved.
Yeah. He doesn't have a whole lot of upper body strength.
And you're going from Egypt and Spain and all these other places on your way to Ireland. But
hey, why are you guys carrying that rock?
Yeah.
No problem. No reason. Don't worry. We're fine.
It's not a consecrated pillow rock by any means. Anyway, so here is how the connection gets made.
Connection is made.
The Tia... Teffi, which you're right, is not a biblical name. That is a Gaelic name to describe this eldest daughter of Zedekiah.
My favorite Jewish Irish princess, or Jip.
Oof. She marries the King of Ireland, whose name is spelled E-O-C-H-A-I-D-H and is pronounced Eoch. Or, yeah.
No, you said Oka.
Oka. It's pronounced Oka.
That sounds right.
Yeah, Oka.
All the DH stuff goes away.
But also the Oka. AI stuff.
So yeah, that always happens in Irish.
Yeah, so basically IDH is gone and it's just Oka.
They're very ambitious when they're writing. But you'd think flower of speech, they would really like to ham it up with the pronunciations, but they don't.
I wonder if in their fancy writing, they just... put a really long squiggly tail on the A, and later scribes were like, I guess that says A-D-H? It's possible.
This is like me trying to read a Final Jeopardy response.
Anyway, they together spawn what becomes the royal line of Tara, which then is, because she was the eldest daughter of the last king of Judah, and because Judaism is a matrilineal
yes.
religion, the royal line of Tara in Ireland becomes the
Royal House of Israel.
Royal House of Israel.
Now, I don't want to sound too skeptical on religious matters because that's out of character for me, but it does seem like this is the kind of thing you would want to invent after your country had been Christianized to show that its pre-Christian roots actually had a deep royal connection to your new faith tradition.
Interesting.
Do you not buy this?
Interesting. No, I mean...
teach the controversy.
That all seems right.
Doesn't that seem more likely? So you brought us this new holy book. Hey, actually, it turns out the people in this holy book are our ancestors. Did we not mention that?
Right. Well, and there is a lot of this scholarship then goes back and says, there's a lot of reference to Jeremiah. It's just that we called him a different name because... we couldn't pronounce Jeremiah, or because we added an IDH to the end of it. But again, most of those records begin in the Middle Ages.
Do you know why? I just thought of this. Do you know why the princesses didn't kiss Jeremiah?
Why?
Because Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
Did you just think of that? Or
yeah, it took me quite a while.
You haven't been working on that for half an hour?
The wheels have been chugging away. He would have turned back into Jeremiah, but they didn't do it. They didn't kiss him.
Dun, dun, dun. So then the stone then...
So the stone's in Ireland.
The stone is in Ireland.
Is there a historical Irish stone that comes to be associated with this tradition?
Why, yes, there is. It is within Ireland, there is a stone right now called the Stone of Destiny. In Gaelic, it's known as the Lia Fail. I'm just taking a wild swing at that.
That was an epic Lia Fail in pronunciation.
Lia Fail, Fail, L-I-A, F-A with a accent aigu, I-L.
It is not called an accent aigu in Irish, I'm sure.
It's an accent grave. It's an accent grave. No, I don't know which one it is. It is called, you would be able to know better than I. But it is the Stone of Destiny.
That's such a great name. It's like from an 80s straight-to-video fantasy movie. Like the Beastmaster through the Portal of Time probably has the Stone of Destiny or one of those Conan sequels.
It's also called the Speaking Stone.
Ooh, what does it do?
Well, it's where you go to speak. I don't think the stone, maybe the stone speaks to you.
I see. It's a stone for speaking.
But it either was brought to Ireland by a half man, half god race of ancient Gaelic partiers, or maybe it is related to the, I don't think that it is. Well, here, we'll get there.
I did not mean to jump ahead.
The Stone of Destiny in Ireland was where the Irish kings were crowned. They sat on the Stone of Destiny. Although now the Stone of Destiny, it still is in Ireland, and it is erected as a standing stone. So it would be very hard, I think, to sit on it.
What does that mean? It's erected as a standing stone.
Well, it's like on its end.
Oh, I see. So you'd have to kind of perch.
Yeah, it's sort of tall. It's like
be swinging your legs if you sat on it.
I mean, I guess it's only 3 feet high, so you could. Yeah, you could jump. You could hop up.
Is it barstool height?
Yeah, but it doesn't look comfortable to sit on. Hmm. I assumed that it was laying flat back in the day, but maybe not. Maybe the half gods stuck it in the ground. It's got stones around it. It's
some kind of historical Stonehenge-like spot.
Yeah. Although, yeah, it's been there for an awful long time, and it is reputed to have mythical or magical powers. The stone could rejuvenate the king. It made some kind of noise when the king sat on it. Like a roar.
It's like a whoopee cushion.
It went rawr when the King of Ireland sat.
Is that
on
how
it?
You can tell if somebody's the King of Ireland?
Yes.
Hey, have a seat over here.
Yes.
It's like the Princess and the Pea.
Because a false king sat on it and didn't roar, and then a different king hit it with his sword because he was mad at it.
Mm.
You know, Ireland's a complicated country.
Yeah, but a roaring stone is a good thing to have around.
A roaring stone gathers no sauce. So in about 500, up to the year 500 AD, all the Irish kings were crowned on the Stone of Destiny. In about 500, Irish King Murtagh MacGarrick loaned the stone to his nephew Fergus.
Probably shouldn't loan out the magical roaring stone that's the legitimacy of your reign.
Well, because Fergus was becoming king of Scotland, which was part of the Scots-Irish mega kingdom.
They were unifying the family,
and so he was going to take the stone to Scotland and have his coronation there.
Okay.
And you needed the stone to have it be a legitimate coronation. But then Fergus, although crowned in Scotland on the Stone of Destiny, Fergus then drowned in a shipwreck. And the stone, he was supposed to bring the stone back, but the stone ended up marooned in Scotland.
At least it's not at the bottom of the ocean. It wasn't aboard the wrecked ship.
There you go.
Okay.
Now, it's somewhat confusing how there currently is a Stone of Destiny in Ireland, and also this particular Stone of Destiny.
Well, sure, this is like having so many shards of the True Cross, you can make a forest.
A lot of Stones of Destiny, and I don't think it's possible. I mean, it's possible that the two Stones of Destiny once were one Stone of Destiny.
Sure, or maybe once a Stone of Destiny leaves Ireland, a backup Stone of Destiny is chosen or assumes the mantle.
Or maybe the Stone of Destiny that Murtagh sent with Fergus was not the real Stone of Destiny.
It was like a backup Stone of Destiny.
Yeah. Either way, there now was a Scottish Stone of Destiny, which became the stone that Scottish kings sat on to be crowned. For many centuries. Now, the stone at this point has a couple of iron rings buried into its sides. So
presumably
you can
to help lift it or move it.
Lift it up, and it's got
by chain.
Some crosses carved into it that must have happened somewhere during the Christianization. So it seems like although this was a consecrated holy stone, not so holy that you couldn't chip crosses into it and stick iron rings into it because, you know, it needed, they needed it to be easier to schlep.
Yeah, it still apparently has whatever its symbolic or totemic power,
right?
Even if you mod it, trick it out.
It's a little tricked out.
Are we ever going to get back to the purported biblical origins of it? Like, is that... At what point do people start to say, and clearly this came from Ireland, which is where Jeremiah left it?
Well, the question of how it... I think until the Christian period, the Stone of Destiny was seen as a mythical, mystical stone.
It was where the old gods, before they got downgraded to fairy status, would be worshipped, right?
I think the story of it being from Jeremiah and Jeremiah's arrival in Ireland.
And therefore Genesis 23 or whatever you said.
Those stories go back word of mouth all the way to the Christianization of these places. Because as you say, it's nice to think of us, to think of the Irish as one of the lost tribes of Israel, if you're looking for a Christian justification.
But when it shows up, by the time it shows up in Scotland, people are already saying these religious stories about it, these Christian stories about it?
Yeah, it sort of depends on who, I mean, at this point, in 500, Scotland is Christianized,
mm-hmm.
Right? Wait a minute. Yeah, the transfer of the stone from Ireland to Scotland kind of coincides with the Christianization of Scotland. And that Christianization happened as a sort of combination of factors. The dying embers of the Roman Empire, there were Roman legions that brought Christianity from Rome, but mm-hmm. also through Ireland, there was a lot of missionary work over to Scotland as the admixture of those two nations. So the stone and Christianity and the kings of Scotland all kind of coalesced together in this tradition of sitting on the stone to be crowned king, and that then legitimizing your kingship by connecting it to the
God of Israel.
The God of Israel, and then our relationship to the God of Israel.
Yeah.
The later stuff, the medieval stuff, was all part of the kind of the movement of, wait a minute, can we find literary justification for these stories? Can we actually go back through the libraries and find in the scholarly work some kind of historicity to the tales? And that continues to the day, to this day. And part of it, as you were saying, it became part of a movement later on in the 18th century known as British Israelism.
I think we might have talked about this before, but I can't remember which entry.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
But yeah, founding Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land.
Right.
An idea that most Christians would think of as a fairly odd thing to do.
British Israelism, it turns out, is what actually drove the rats out of Ireland. but British Israelism, the idea of it ultimately was that because the princesses of Judea established their kingdom in Ireland, what that means is that the Jews are not actually the Jews. The Jews are not the descendants of
Israel. It's not just that we're an offshoot, we're the actual Cleveland Browns.
And
they're not.
The Jews themselves are descendants of a relationship between Lilith and Satan.
Wow. So this is not just this is actually some pretty strong anti-Semitism.
Yes, right.
It's a way to delegitimize Jewish immigration into the UK.
It's been very difficult over the centuries for Christian nationalists to reconcile their Christian nationalism with
the Jewish roots of their religion.
The
right?
Jewish roots of their religion. And so if you make this connection, which comes before Christ, right? This all happened 500 years before Christ.
Asterisk.
The true, yeah, right. Spoiler alert. The true right. Israel lives in England, and that British Israelism really affected the Pentecostal and Mormon movements in the United States. Like, a lot of that idea of, oh, no, it's actually, there's actually a connection that predates, you know, what we think of as the connections.
Right. The cliffhanger of the Lost Tribes of Israel is a very compelling part of the Bible for other people to hang new theology onto.
Yeah, it really is. And these ideas now really underpin the Christian identity movement in the United States. If you scratch the surface of Christian identity,
I don't know if this is some white nationalist.
Yeah, it's the whole white nationalist movement.
Christo-fascism.
That it is seeking to legitimize the idea that America is a Christian nation, and also the Russians are using it to justify that Russia is a Christian.
We're always the chosen people. Right. Our holy book about how the Jews are the chosen people, please pay no attention to.
Well, it's really about us.
Yeah.
And the Jews themselves are just they're a real problem. Not actually the Jews. They're a different group.
Wow, I don't think I knew any of this. This is appalling.
They're from Satan. Anyway, here the stone sits in Scotland for another 700 years with a lot of Scottish kingly butts, big dumpers sitting on it.
In kilts.
Until Edward Longshanks, mm-hmm. in his invasion of Scotland in 1270-aught.
From the movie Braveheart?
I guess he was king from 1272 to 1307, and in 1296, when he invaded Scotland, he took the Stone of Destiny, the Stone of Scone, Stone of Destiny Part 2, Scottish version.
Scottish remix.
The Stone of Destiny, as we understand it today, he took it back to England with him as a spoil of war. Whereupon...
I mean, that's just a symbolic gesture, like, your kings aren't anymore. We've got your magic rock, right?
We've got your magic rock, and it's like subjugating Scotland to England, because if the Scottish kings are crowned on this stone, then...
Guess what?
We'll
crown our own Scottish kings. We'll crown as many Scottish kings as we want.
Yeah. And so Edward had made for the Stone of Destiny a chair.
Wait, what?
A chair that contained the stone. So the stone, it's a big wood chair, and the stone was in the chair.
When you sit on it, are you sitting on a wooden seat above the stone, or are you sitting on like a toilet-like hole in the wooden part that lets you sit on rock?
For centuries, you just sat on the rock.
Mm-hmm.
The stone held the rock, and then you sat on the rock.
The chair held the rock?
The chair held the rock.
Okay.
The chair held the stone, and you sat directly on the stone. It looks like a throne.
I see, but it's like a bucket you've put the stone in or
something. Yeah, it's a throne with a stone, and the stone is the seat of the chair. And this is called St. Edward's Chair, the coronation chair. It was crafted by a carpenter by the name of Walter of Durham, and it's the oldest thing that can be attributed to a single named carpenter.
In Britain or in the world?
Well, I think
maybe
in the world.
Yeah.
Walter of Durham being the oldest carpenter we know of who made the coronation chair. The stone, you sat, if you were being crowned the monarch of England.
Which is a big if,
You would sit directly on the stone until the 1600s, at which point a wooden seat was added.
Oh, okay.
On top of the stone. Although the stone was still in the chair.
This is the equivalent of popes not riding horses anymore. Yeah. Somebody wanted a comfier seat at some point.
I'd like a little bit of a wood seat that is a cold stone.
Got it.
The chair over the years has become fancier and fancier. It was gilded lions were added to it.
Oh, then, so there's still a chair. It's not just a stone? Oh, sorry.
Wait a minute. Sorry. Wait a minute. There were more lions that was gilded and painted and inlaid. And every king or queen ordained in England sat on the chair. The chair was only moved a couple of times in that entire time.
So it's always in Westminster Abbey? The whole time?
It was moved once when
they had to sweep under it.
They did sweep under it, but no, it's heavy because it has a big stone in it. They moved it when Oliver Cromwell was, and I think at one point,
like he moved it because it's a sign of the monarchy, or they moved it to get it away from him.
No, I think they moved it out into somewhere that wasn't Westminster Abbey, and he sat on it.
Oh. Even Cromwell's like, I got my magic.
You gotta sit
I got
on my magic stone.
Butt rock.
In the 1700s, it was actually kind of a tourist attraction. You could pay a small, you know, a shilling or less and actually sit on it. There were no cameras, so you couldn't take a selfie there, but you could sit on the Stone of Scone.
Was there an admission price?
There was a little admission price, but talk about times being,
I know, maybe times being what they are.
Yeah. The coronation chair actually has like people carved their initials into it.
Wow.
And chipped off little pieces of it as souvenirs.
Just like Plymouth Rock.
Just like Plymouth Rock. It, in 1914, a bomb went off, that was planted by suffragettes.
Wow.
And they were attempting to promote the vote for women somehow by blowing up the coronation chair.
Well, they're merely soldiers in petticoats.
That's exactly right. Primarily because they were women, the bomb did not destroy the chair.
You ready for me to sing? You look like you're waiting for me to sing something.
I was waiting for you to sing some song of condemnation
of
me for saying that women can't build the same quality of bombs as male terrorists.
We're merely soldiers in petticoats.
Yeah, I knew you had it in you.
Dauntless crusaders for women's votes.
In World War II, they actually moved it to Gloucester Cathedral.
Oh, to avoid the bombing.
To avoid the bombing, but then moved it immediately back. In 1950... So the Stone of Scone and its place in the oh, I should say that of course over time England and Scotland gradually unified.
That's what the U in UK stands for, baby.
That's right. In 1707, the Treaty of Union.
At that point, so kings of Scotland had been doing without this until.
Yeah.
Until the 1700s.
Yeah.
Until the Stuarts unified the throne.
That's right. Somehow they were able to be kings of Scotland without sitting on
with
this
nobody roaring
stone.
At their butt.
But there has long been a Scottish nationalist movement, I would say continuously.
Yeah.
And it was not until 1950 that a group of Scottish college students
learned to read. Thank
they
you.
Finally learned to read.
Just kidding, Scotland.
Language was finally brought to Scotland. No, they snuck down from Glasgow and stole the Stone of Scone.
Wow. This is a real all-timer as far as fraternity pranks go.
Yes. But the four of them were basically like Jeremiah and three princesses. They couldn't actually carry it. They dropped it and broke it. They broke a corner of it.
Did they get it like 200 feet from Westminster Abbey?
No, they actually managed to get it all the way back to Scotland.
Wow.
In 1950, where they hid it from the English, but
they'd broken it.
Somebody ratted them out. Somehow, it was returned to England in time for the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II.
Oh, which was just a couple years later.
1953.
Maybe it just started roaring on the train when they were trying to get it back home on
Roar!
British Rail or the
Roar!
Do you have a stone of schoon in that bag, young man?
Say.
Nay, I don't.
I don't have it. And by some wonderful coincidence, the last of the four students who were responsible for stealing the Stone of Destiny from the from its place in the Chair of Coronation.
Yes, yes. Go on.
Ian Hamilton, who became one of the leading lawyers and champions of Scottish independence.
Oh, interesting.
Died yesterday. At the time of this
recording. As we record this, early October 2022.
He only died yesterday, the last of the four.
Is this what inspired your interest in the topic?
No, I only discovered that as I was researching it yesterday. I said, wait a minute,
Do you have an alibi? This seems a little coincidental. Where were you when former MP Hamilton died or whatever?
It seems a little strange, but that is just how things work. There are no coincidences, or maybe there are. No one will ever know. But the four of them were really celebrated in Scotland because it's exactly the kind of prank that the Scots love that's also deadly serious.
Right, because there is a sincere nationalist movement there, particularly after Brexit, that may lead to a referendum soon.
Well, just the other day, the current British Tory Prime Minister?
Mm-hmm. It'll probably be somebody else by the time people hear this in a month.
Ms. Truss came out saying that if the Scottish people try to stage another referenda of independence, she will fight it, saying that that was meant to be only a referendum that happened once in a generation, and they already had theirs back in 2014, and so she is going to use her prime ministerial powers to prevent it.
And it's really the lines of Scottish self-governance now are blurry enough that it's not really clear whether or not she can or has to permit such a referendum.
Well, and that's the thing. If you want to really get the Scots to push a referendum, the best way to do that is as an English prime minister to say that
you're not allowed, they're not allowed unless I let you. Also, it's not like Liz Truss has the least shaky mandate right now. I'm not sure how much political capital she has to piss off 60% of Scotland.
I'm not sure she's going to make it to the end of the year. But in 1996, as an appeasement of the Scottish nation and you know, in the service of goodwill, mm-hmm, toward all, the British government returned
a Tesco van rumbled northward.
They returned the Stone of Destiny under considerable armed guard, mm-hmm, to Scotland, where it currently resides in Edinburgh Castle, next to the Scottish crown jewels.
Was that its old home? Like, there's no historical reason for it to be an Edinburgh Castle.
No, it lived under the Abbey of Scone, right, or Scone, or Scone.
Any vowel, really.
Yeah.
Abbey of Skin.
That's where it traditionally lived. Now it's in Edinburgh Castle because that's where everything...
That's where tourists can file past it, I'm sure.
That's exactly what it is. And, but the coronation chair remains the only chair that any English monarch has been crowned upon. Any upon the crown
upon
of...
Upon which any monarch has been crowned?
Ever since Edward Longshanks brought it back in 1296.
So the chair is still in Westminster. It just has an empty stone compartment beneath it.
And it was so firmly ensconced in the chair that it took...
Or ensconced, we don't know.
Ensconced. It took a whole day and a whole team of people just to get it out of the chair.
Huh.
And so, for the coronation of Charles... King Charles III to happen at an unnamed date at this point.
TBA, game three if necessary.
The Scots are returning the Stone of Destiny to reinstall it in the chair for Charles's coronation.
Just as a loner?
As a loner. Then it's going to go back.
A loner stoner?
But, you know, it hasn't been used to this purpose since 1953.
You think it's a little rusty? It might not have a good roar in it?
I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure. Well, it's certainly like it's gathering no moss up there.
I wonder if this, I mean, the Scots had some leverage. They could have said, yeah, you'll get your rock back if we get our referendum. That's just free advice for me.
I feel like it's all, you know, it's all, you spread goodwill by doing a good turn without hope of recompense.
Do something nice for the sovereign's butt. That's as the old saying goes.
Although it does suggest that the sovereign continued to have sovereignty over Scotland if you put his...
That's what I'm saying.
His royal butt on the Scottish stone.
It's a powerful symbolic gesture.
Yeah, right. It is either a little, way. It's a little bit of a bending the knee. It hasn't happened yet. So some students from Glasgow or some suffragettes from Glasgow may yet thwart it.
And that concludes the stone of Scone, Scoon, or Scon, or Scun, as Shakespeare has it. Entry 1229.PS11822, certificate number 42504, in the omnibus. Futurelings, you can find us on social media in our day at Ken Jennings, at John Roderick, and at Omnibus Project. This would be the place to put it in our face when we immediately prove to be wrong about some detail of near future British history.
This is the place to put it in our face. This is the place to put it in our face.
We're not prophetic. We're not the prophet Jeremiah wandering through Northern Africa with a ragtag assortment of...
Ragtag fugitive fleet.
Of princesses and a scribe.
No, although it's one of my aspirations to wander through Egypt with a retinue of princesses and scribes.
But if our prophecies do turn out to be accurate, perhaps we have inherited something of Jeremiah's prophetic calling from our British ancestry. And we can go back proudly to Anglang.
My stoon of scoon is this squeaky chair.
It's true. It roars. It roars every time you sit on it.
That's it's authentic. How we know I am the king.
It's how we know you are moving around more than I do during the show. Also, is my chair less squeaky?
It is.
It's a little less squeaky.
Well, you weigh fully 100 pounds less than I do because you are more elfin than I.
We could switch.
I'm like a troll by comparison.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to switch because I've also, I mean, I've thrashed this chair, whereas your chair is still fairly pristine.
I'm like Prince Charles. I dutifully repair every little rip and tear in this seat. And
you dutifully repair every rip and tear.
It's like, why is this show a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta?
I don't know. When I set up our bunker originally, I made, I don't know why, the category error of buying us white leather office chairs, which seems like...
What could be more post-dystopian than that?
Yeah, are they going to hold up over time? But they seem to have. But mine, I'm confessing now, I actually had to rebuild this chair.
The one you're on?
Yeah, I broke it just by sitting on it, so I had to take it apart and reinforce it with plywood. So it squeaks for other reasons, but the chair itself has been bolstered.
I mean, even the Stone of Scone broke, and it's rock, and it's only been sat on, eight times since the Stuarts? I lost count. Did William and Mary both sit on it?
I don't know. Maybe.
Did they each sit on one side like a love toilet?
Maybe one sat on the other's lap.
Aw, that would be nice.
There are a lot of other thrones used during the coronation. This is just the one when it actually happens. Then there are like more comfortable chairs that they sit in.
You sit in this briefly.
Yeah.
And it's then a you long move on day, to a I nicer think. Seat. Yeah, I will not be watching. So send your objections to theomnibusproject@gmail.com. If John and I turn out to be correct about every particular, please embrace us as your prophets.
Go on the Reddit and talk about how great we are.
Yeah, look for the futurelings on subreddits and discords and Facebook gathering places and the like. You could also send us physical items, although not heavy Jacobian stone pillows.
No stoons, but you could sell us, I don't know.
You could send us scones.
Send us little prophetic stoons in a velvet bag.
Send us clotted cream to eat on scones to Omnibus Project.
How long does clotted cream last? Is it one of those things in British grocery stable? Stores that are shelf stable?
I think you can open it. I think you can jar clotted cream.
Well, don't send us an open jar of it.
No. Send us your Sainsbury's clotted cream to PO Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington 98155, and we will sample it and let you know if it gives us salmonella.
That's right.
Or not. Or mad cow, possibly, if you're British. You could join the Patreon. Would it kill you? Patreon.com/omnibusproject affords many chances to get other cool omnibus stuff, including a bonus episode every month. If you have listened to all 512 omnibus entries, but you are not a Patreon member, there are now upwards of 35 episodes you have not heard that you could binge in one crazy lost weekend just by becoming a donor at the lowest level, at the lowest donor tier at patreon.com/omnibusproject.
As Judas Priest famously said, do it.
What did he mean, though?
Do it.
Did he mean worship Satan?
You mean he. It's a band, not a hymn.
I didn't mean that Judas Priest was the hymn.
Who?
I don't know. Who's the lead singer of that particular? What song is that even?
Rob Halford.
Yeah, is that?
No, there was that famous lawsuit where some kid did some bad things and his parents sued Judas Priest because they claimed that in one of their songs they said, do it. And then the kid went and did it, whatever it was.
I don't think.
The kid went and did
it. You can't just apply it to whatever activity you're annoyed about.
Yeah, I don't know whether he killed his friend or he killed himself or shoplifted some candy bars.
I mean, Rob Halford probably does want teenage kids to do a lot of depraved stuff.
Do it.
Don't get me wrong.
I don't know. I'm not sure. He just seems like a regular middle-aged gay guy that just wants to have a clotted cream on his scone.
He doesn't want you to do something dangerous in traffic.
Oh, you know, I meant to update people. I've been meaning to update people for a long time about my cryptocurrency wallet. I forgot to say.
Oh, what a shame that we're out of time.
I forgot to say that someone did put some Ethereum in my crypto wallet. They put $10 worth of Ethereum in there. And the last time I checked, Ken, it was worth $11.
Wow.
What about that?
Well, if they had given you 10 British pounds, you would have now $9. So,
right.
So that you did the right currency exchange there.
It's doing better. It's doing better. So I want you all to remember that you can still, if you go back to the, I forget already what it was called, but maybe
crypto wallet,
all the great shows.
Yes.
Whatever my crypto handle was. Anyway, I'm getting rich one Ethereum at a time.
This is how you know that if you do this to John, he will not even mention your name or remember his wallet location.
Well, I have to assume that the person that did it doesn't want their name mentioned because we're all part of a crypto brotherhood that...
Well, yeah, if you own cryptocurrency, all you're using it for is to buy...
drugs on the Silk Road.
Opium and trafficked children.
Hopefully, the person that gave me that 1/1000th of an Ethereum is not a trafficking children. I talked to him a little bit.
Not with that $10, he's not.
I trafficked him. I talked to him, and he seemed very nice. Futurelings, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may have been our final word. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon. And we wish you many fine goods and delicious cheese.
And clotted cream.
And potentially Scottish independence. And hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.